So you ready for another great day?
Ready.
When I checked the weather report before coming here a couple weeks ago, it said it was supposed to rain all weekend, but it looks like, I guess God had other plans in mind, right? So I'm going to go on a horseback ride 10:45. Who else is going on that? Anybody? I'm going to go. My wife is allergic to horses, so I can't. Anyway, you don't care. So here we are together today. I just kind of want to continue our conversation. I want to begin with a story. So there's a young woman in our church. She was a senior in high school this last year. Her name is Hannah. If you live in the Milwaukee area, you might have seen her on the news. But she, this past summer, ran across the state of Wisconsin, the entire state. She made all kinds of news stories. And the reason she did it was to support a cause she's very, very passionate about. So a couple years ago, we had a speaker at our church. His name was Brian Hunter. And Brian Hunter is a man who saw childhood poverty in Mongolia and decided to run across the entire country of Mongolia to raise money and awareness for child poverty in Mongolia. And so Hannah was at that worship service on a Sunday morning when Brian Hunter spoke. She also heard another speaker in our area talk about the plight of human trafficking in our own country, and soon discovered that Milwaukee is actually one of the hubs for human trafficking in the Midwest. And so she kind of got this passion, this burden for these women that go through this awful, awful abuse, and she thought, what can I do? And so she got this brilliant idea based on her inspiration from Brian Hunter. She was going to raise money and awareness for a safe house in Milwaukee by running across the state of Wisconsin over a period of 10 days. So she started in Superior, Wisconsin with a team of people. The route would require 40 miles a day. And so she herself ran 20, and the rest of her team ran the other 20. Now think about this. She ran just short of a marathon every day for 10 days straight, every single day. And she completed it. And she made the news, and she raised a bunch of money for Exploit No More, which is building a safe house in Milwaukee. And it was an amazing, amazing thing for a senior in high school to accomplish, really on her own. But what if Hannah had said, maybe someday I'll do that? Someday when it's easier? Because it's always easier to say someday. Lots of people live in the land of someday. You know, the time when I'm not too busy, or when it's a little less risky, or when the kids move out of the house, or when I have a little more in the bank. It's always easier to mindlessly walk the path of least resistance and to wait for the perfect moment than to have the courage and the bravery to make the move now. There's a passage, a small passage in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 4. It's in verse 11. Ecclesiastes is attributed to King Solomon, who wrote in his later years. King Solomon was the son of King David. Ecclesiastes really is a fascinating book written before his death in the year 931 BC. So the book of Ecclesiastes is roughly 3,000 years old. I mean, it's amazing to think how old the Bible is when you really kind of dig into the historical context of it. But the content of the book of Ecclesiastes is someone reflecting on their life, looking back on a long life. And Solomon's life was long on experience, but not very lasting in rewards. King Solomon had the resources and the opportunity to pursue whatever he wanted, wisdom, pleasure, it was all his. And yet, as you read Ecclesiastes, the book is really world-weary. It's a man that looks back on his folly and his regret, pointing us, future generations, to a life better lived in God's direction. And so here's what he writes in Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 4. He says, "Farmers who wait for perfect weather never plant. If they watch every cloud, they will never harvest." Let me think about that short passage for a moment. Because the truth is, we live in a culture of fear, And we live in a culture that sensationalizes everything. And so a lot of the decisions that you and I make, if we're honest, are based on fear. Fear of loss, fear of failure, fear of criticism, fear of being harmed, fear of humiliation, fear of being found out. And as much as I love like technology and the endless access to information, it has only perpetuated our fears. And take WebMD, for example. And have you ever been on WebMD? Do you know what I'm talking about, WebMD? So I've been on WebMD several times, and I'll type in my symptoms on WebMD, and I either have a cold or cancer. And there's not like, I mean, it's, I think I've prepared my funeral three times because of WebMD. Matter of fact, my wife now knows of this secret habit, and she says to me, she says, honey, there's only two things you can't do on the internet, pornography and WebMD. It's kind of, and usually WebMD's first because she knows what it does to me. Because listen, fears are confining. Fears are a thief. For some of us, fear has taken up permanent residence in our soul. Fear leads to inaction, it leads to defensiveness, and it leads to anxiety and worry. Listen, I get it. I understand. When I was in college, I started having these days of extreme anxiety about all kinds of things. And as I became an adult, coming out of college, my anxiety got worse and worse and worse to the point where my anxiety actually became life-controlling. And it became this demon in my life that I could not beat. So finally, I went to my doctor because it was ruining my life. And I went to my doctor and I was diagnosed with a hereditary condition called GAD, or generalized anxiety disorder. Now, when I first found out about it, I was embarrassed by it, right? Because we kind of put the illnesses of the mind in a different category than illnesses of, say, your body. But I realized that this issue and this anxiety were controlling and robbing me of the life that God wanted me to have. Because listen, most people suffer more from their imagination than they ever do reality. Mark Twain once said, "I'm an old man, and I've known a great many troubles, but most of them have never happened." The Apostle Paul writes to Timothy in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 7. He says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power, of love, and of self-control." And Jesus, in the Gospel of John, chapter 10, verse 10, writes, "I have come to give you life and life to the full." Some translations say life abundantly. Not just referring to someday in heaven, but referring to right now, that we can live a life of abundance. Now I'm convinced that part of the abundant life that Jesus talked about is living a life of bravery. Both the Old Testament and the New Testament are filled with stories who lived life to the full and did extraordinary acts on behalf of God, but every act required bravery. Abraham, Moses, Joshua, Rahab, Esther, Paul, Peter, and Jesus lived extraordinary lives of bravery. But because we live in a culture of fear, instead of acting bravely, many of us have adopted the mantra of someday. And someday becomes an excuse for everything. Someday I'll make the move. Someday I'll take the risk. Someday I'll stand up for the injustice. Someday I'll share my faith. Someday I'll speak my mind. Someday I'll be honest. Someday I'll confess. Someday I'll take the risk. Someday I will pursue my God-given destiny. But the problem is, farmers who wait for perfect weather never plant. If they watch every cloud, there's never going to be a harvest. See, there's often no reward without risk. Now, when Solomon wrote this, he lived in a time of, of agriculture, of course. Many of the Bible writers engage in the imagery of common day living. So as I read this passage, I'm trying to take myself back to the time of Solomon, and I imagine this ancient farmer with a bag of seeds. And these are bird seeds, but just pretend. So he's got his bag of seeds, and he's going to plant, but he's watching the clouds. Oh, no, not today. No, not today. No, not today. It's too risky. Watching the clouds. Lots of people are cloud watchers. If you wait for the perfect timing, nothing will ever happen. Because listen, I can be a cloud watcher. I have been a cloud watcher to the point of missed opportunity. And I believe that it takes bravery to actually do something. It takes bravery to go from here to here. Are you willing? 6 years ago, my wife and I, my two children, were living in Colorado Springs. We were there for 10 years. My wife is from Colorado. She grew up there. My wife's family still lives in Colorado. And we were sensing a change coming in our life, a season. Now, we had it great in Colorado. I could see Pikes Peak from my driveway. It's sunny in Colorado 300 days a year. I live 2 hours from the best snowboarding, in my opinion, on the planet. And we're sitting there. I mean, I've served this church for 10 years, and we built a new building, and things are kind of starting to go in the right direction when I felt this stirring. And I get this call out of the blue from this guy representing a church just outside of Milwaukee. Now, when I got the call, I had to look on the map to see where Milwaukee was. So I knew where Wisconsin was, but I didn't know where Milwaukee was. And the guy called me and said, hey, I found your name. We've got this church. It's looking for a pastor. Would you be interested? And I said, as I looked at Pikes Peak, no, I'm not interested. Well, this guy kept calling me, explaining the situation to me. And finally, they convinced me to at least come check it out. Now, listen, I have two kids, both born in Colorado. My life is good in Colorado. I'm at the best financially I've ever been. And now a guy wants me to move to the Midwest. Now listen, I grew up in Buffalo, New York. I know about snow. I had it good in Colorado. But we went and checked it out. My wife said, I think we're supposed to move here. And I said, you need to go talk to God a little bit more. It would require me not only moving my family thousands of miles across the country, it would require me to leave the denomination I was serving under as an ordained pastor. It would require me to go to a place where I didn't know one person. And it was almost as if the Lord was whispering to me, this is what I want you to do. Do you have the bravery to act? Because it was a very, very insecure time. Our church was going through some major changes, Northbrook was, and it was a lot of insecurity there, and I didn't know what I was walking into. So what does it actually mean to be brave? The dictionary says bravery means to face and endure danger, to face pain, or to face the unknown. And when we hear the word bravery, we think of courage and we have images in our head. Maybe when I say the word bravery, you have an image in your head. Whenever I hear the word bravery, I've got several images in my head. The first one is this. I've got a picture of it. Maybe you remember this picture. There's a very famous picture during the revolt in Tiananmen Square in China where the young college student stood in front of a row of tanks. I mean, to me, that's kind of the image of bravery. Or another image of bravery to me is this next image of Martin Luther King marching in Selma, Alabama. That to me is a moment of incredible bravery. I also think of a young woman from the Middle East named Malala Yousafzai. It's Arab, okay? So this young lady is an inspirational story in which she defied the Taliban in Pakistan, was shot because she was standing up for girls' rights to be educated. Inspiring. Or this next picture, maybe you think of the military, the men and women of the armed forces who do dizzying acts of bravery on behalf of our country. Or maybe we even go to the Bible and we think of Moses and Moses saying, let my people go. Or Stephen in the book of Acts preaching at cost of his life. But what about those ordinary acts of bravery that we will never hear about, those acts that will never make the covers of magazines? What about those? I also think of my daughter, who 2 years ago, when she was 10, she was on the bus, and one of her little friends was a boy, and he was getting bullied by another boy, and my daughter stood in between them and stuck up for this little boy in front of the bully. I thought that was an extraordinary act of bravery for a girl. My daughter weighs like 60 pounds soaking wet, okay? And she stood. Or maybe the person who changes careers because it's in a better in alignment with who God created you to be, and you take a risk and you make a midlife career change because you believe God is calling. Or maybe bravery is simply having a face-to-face conversation instead of firing off that email because it would be so much easier. Or maybe bravery is the person who stays true to their faith, even though it means enduring ridicule, mocking, and persecution. Or maybe bravery is having that conversation, and you know exactly which conversation I'm talking about. That conversation that you need to have, but you've been avoiding because you're afraid of confrontation. Or maybe bravery is the addict who finally has the courage to stand up and say, I can't live like this anymore. Will someone please help me? Or maybe bravery is the man who has the courage to confess a failure and put the pieces back together of his life. When I was 8 or 9, maybe 10 years old, I had this friend that lived up the street from me. And we would always go to his house because his parents both worked and they were never home, so we could get into a lot of trouble. And we would do whatever we wanted. So I'll never forget, one day we were at his house. We were playing in his house, and we went upstairs and we were messing around in his brother's room, his older brother's room. We weren't supposed to go up there, but we went up there anyway. And we were messing around in his brother's room, and we knocked his bed, and the mattress moved, and we discovered his stash of Playboy magazines. And so, you know, curious 10-year-old mind, we opened these Playboy magazines, and we were both immediately hooked on it. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 years old, hooked on sex and pornography and all this stuff, and was destroying my little mind. I became a Christian in my late teen years, but just because you become a Christian doesn't mean you stop being human. And that followed me. I finally got a hold of it, got it to the point where I wasn't, you know, diving into the addiction. However, even at 20, 30, and even now at 40 years old, I can still see in my mind the images I saw when I was 10. And even at 30, 40 years old, just like every man in this room, I've stolen the lustful glance. My eyes have lingered too long, and I wrestled with that for years and years and years. And one day I was on a walk. I like to walk. I was walking by myself, and I was praying, and I felt the Lord say to me, this was probably 10 years ago, I felt the Lord say to me, I need you to go and confess. And I'm praying, and I'm, confess what? And the Lord said to me, everything. And I said, okay, God. You know, have you ever had these conversations with God where you're kind of talking, but you're arguing? And I said, okay, God, confess to who? And he said, to your wife. I said, confess what? Everything from when the time you were 8. Now think about that for a minute, okay? All right, God. A few days later, it took a few days of thinking about that. I went home. I was at home, and I was sitting on the bed with my wife. And I just said, hey, we need to talk about some things. And I just told her everything. I went all the way back to when I was 8 years old. And what I discovered is confession is cleansing of the soul. It was probably the greatest act of bravery I've ever had to commit in my life. And you know what I got from my wife? Compassion, mercy, grace. And because of that moment, because of that act of bravery 10 years ago, I am completely free. Not cured, because I'm still a man with hormones, just like you. Don't think because you become a pastor that you stop being a man. I think there's a lot we can learn from our Catholic friends. I grew up Roman Catholic, and they practice confession. I think confession is a practice of bravery. It takes courage to admit you're wrong. It takes courage to say the things that need to be said. It's hard to be brave and have courage. 2 to 3 years ago, our church was growing, and we were looking at expanding our building, and it was going to be a big project, $8 million. And we're having these conversations, and we're dreaming big, and our church is dreaming together, and we're thinking all these things. And finally, the moment of decision came. And the question was, are we going to do this? Are we really going to build this building? And I'll never forget, I was in a meeting, and all the pastors were there, and all the elders were there, and they all looked at me. Are we going to do this? And I got this sick feeling in my stomach because they're looking to me to make this decision. And I almost said no because the cost is too great. The risk is too high. But here's the truth. The cost of doing nothing is often greater than the cost of doing something risky. Let that sit for just a minute. Maybe you're thinking, well, what have I got to be brave about, really? What is that thing that is tucked away deep in your heart? What is that thing that you would do if you knew you could not fail? Because the truth is, to be brave, you have to know what you stand for. What are your convictions? Every example of bravery in the Bible was always connected to a sacred purpose and deep conviction. Abraham left everything to follow the voice of God. Moses stood up to Pharaoh because of gross injustice. Esther in the Old Testament approaches the king at risk of her life to save her people. And the Apostle Paul faces beatings and ridicule and imprisonment for the sake of the perpetuation of the gospel. Yet in every case, the call to be brave was always accompanied by deep conviction. Because bravery without vision or conviction is just stupidity and arrogance falsely masked as heroics. Sometimes we confuse being brave with just being a jerk. And we say things and do things and post things on social media in which we think we're acting bravely, but we're just coming across as arrogant with an agenda. See, true bravery happens when you are driven by deep conviction and doing something about that deep conviction, even though it's risky. The truth is, if that conviction's from God, he goes with you every single time. I'm reminded of one of the greatest stories of bravery in the Bible. It's the story of Joshua. Joshua chapter 1, Moses has died, and God is going to raise up Joshua to be the leader. Now keep in mind, Joshua was Moses' assistant. Like, Joshua was the secretary to Moses. And now God is saying to Joshua, you're going to take Moses' place. You're going to lead these millions of people into the promised land. And in Joshua chapter 1, verse 6, God says to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Be brave, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give to them. Be strong and be very courageous. Verse 9, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Now think about the implications of this story. Moses is dead. We're talking about the Moses, the man who courageously stood up to Pharaoh, the man who leads the Israelites into the desert. Joshua was the executive assistant. He was the guy that made Moses' coffee, right? And so Joshua stands on the bank of the Jordan River, a million people behind him, the promised land in front of him. I wonder what he's thinking. I wonder what the story was that he was telling himself. Can I really do this? And I'm just an aide. Can I really lead these people? And I wonder if God needed to rewrite the story in Joshua's mind, the story that he was telling himself. Because we all tell ourselves a story. What's the story you tell yourself? Well, I can't do anything brave. I'm just a... You fill in the blank. But God looks at you and says, no, you're not just a... Go and be strong and courageous, for I'm going to go with you. He says to Joshua, you're not just a secretary, you're the leader. Stick out your chest and be brave, for I will go with you. My spirit will go with you. See, there's something about God's spirit that takes the most unlikely of people and makes them into brave men of deep conviction. Because every example of bravery, particularly in the New Testament, was accompanied by God's Spirit going with them. And if you're a follower of Christ, God's Spirit's within you. So, as we kind of wrap up this morning together, what act of bravery is God calling you to? What is God asking you to do? What is that thing that maybe needs to happen as soon as you go home from this retreat to take you from the place where you are to the place you want to be? Because I think the greatest acts of bravery happen in the messy middle. And a lot of you are there. And it may take one act of bravery to move you to that place that God has ordained for you. So, gracious God, this morning I pray for every man that's in this room. Some of us are cloud watchers. Some of us live in the land of someday. I get it, it's easy to live there. Whatever it is, oh God, whether it be large and seemingly insignificant on the surface, would you help us to walk bravely? Not arrogantly, but bravely, as you lead us and guide us. Help us, O God, to do your will in our lives. I believe you've set a path for us. Help us to walk the path that you have chosen for us, that we would live in ways that would honor you, and that we would hear your words to be strong and courageous, that we would not be afraid, we would not be discouraged, for you will go with us and you will be with us wherever we go. And so I pray for all of us this morning, oh God, that we would have the courage and the tenacity to be brave. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.